Peter R. Breggin, M.D., is called the conscience of psychiatry for his many decades of successful reform efforts. His scientific and educational work provide the foundation for modern criticism of drugs and ECT, and lead the way in promoting more caring and effective therapies. His books include Talking Back to Prozac, Toxic Psychiatry, Medication Madness, Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal, and now, Guilt, Shame, and Anxiety, Understanding and Overcoming Negative Emotions. Welcome to the Dr. Peter Breggin Hour.
Hello, 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 my wonderful audience. I hope each of you, every one of you, and I know it's a lot to hope for, but I hope you're having a good day, a better day than yesterday. I hope this decade feels better to you than the decades before. With a little luck, it is possible, with a lot of effort, to keep improving your life and to making it better and better for you and your loved ones. And those two things just go right together. Making your life better goes along with making the lives of your loved ones better. And you can expand that to the community and do work like I do and many other of our listeners, many of you in the audience do, and relate to the world, try to make the world a better place. But happiness, in my experience, satisfaction with life comes the most from having good, sound, loving, respectful, caring relationships. So I really want to emphasize that. And remember, I've written a whole book about it called Guilt, Shame, and Anxiety, Overcoming Your Negative Emotions, Guilt, Shame, and Anxiety. Now, today, and by the way, for those of you just tuning in after the music, you are listening to the Peter Breggin Hour, Dr. Peter Breggin Hour. And if you just happen to bounced on to me somehow in the big digital world out there and don't even know what day I'm on or what's happening, if you or I are disoriented, this is live on April 24th, 2019. And that means you can call in because this is open mic day. Usually on my show, I like to limit the calls if I can to subjects my guest is dealing with. But every Wednesday on the last Wednesday of the month, 4 p.m. New York time, I try to take calls on every subject. And I see that they are starting to come in. So if you want to get lined up, please do that now, and I'll know how many calls we have and be able to judge how to go about answering them. I want to remind you that the best way to keep in touch with me is to go to my frequent alerts on my website, and we have a new and revised website. Let me know what you think of it. We try to make the most important things up top. And so we've got a button there where you can go to my frequent alerts and keep up with things. That's free. And I also want to emphasize breaking news. I don't know if he's listening right now, but my assistant Ian, who lives in another part of this universe, not here in Ithaca, known him for decades, doing a wonderful job with daily breaking news, which, I mean, it's just such a good job. It gives you, along with frequent alerts, it gives you a place to go every day just to read stuff. And Ian manages pretty much, I think, every day to get up something. And let me give you an example of what you'll find on the daily breaking news, fresh baked news, I like to call it. Here is the first subject, a happy wife, longer life. It also be a happy husband. I don't know what that would rhyme with. But having a happier spouse may add years to your lifespan. And that's, I am sure, is true. I think loving and being loved is it's very, very close to the center of life. And then there's an interesting one on childhood trauma, its relationship to schizophrenia and to the risk of suicide. Another important one on bullying and how much that can affect suicide in childhood. And there's more positive stuff. He's got here something called TERMS, T-E-R-M-S, Terms of Happiness. And the terms. Maybe I'll let you look them up, but it's a good shorthand focus on what matters in life. I think it's very worthwhile looking at. Just many, many things. More information on better ways to quit antidepressants. What's happening in the digital world of therapy, using virtual reality to help people develop positive feelings. And don't turn up your nose at positive feelings. I used to when I was young. I thought anybody with positive feelings didn't understand life. But the older I get, the more complicated it all gets. And I end up agreeing with Desmond Tutu and agreeing with other reformers and people who have devoted their lives and risked their lives who talk a great deal about finding happiness and joy in your life while you are standing up to others, while you are defending others. Good little piece on mindfulness. So thank you, Ian, for this really, really a wonderful resource. Daily breaking news and the frequent alerts are very much at the heart now of the website. And I'm going to ask Ian, I think he's been shy to say more about this, but I think we need to get daily breaking news onto much more of a obvious place along with the frequent alerts. And this is free, of course. This is free. Now, you can call in to the show today at 888-874-4888. And remember, if you're listening on April 24th today, rather than in the archives, which you can find on my website, you can call in. It's live. It's live. Remember, we have an app. There's an app for PRN.fm, so you can carry it with you wherever you want to go. And you can send me special messages about the radio show. Email me at breganlive@hotmail.com. breganlive@hotmail.com. I enjoy your feedback. I'd like some feedback on the new configuration of the website. And I just put up, or I'm going to in the next day, Ian, and we'll get up in the next day or so, the part eight of this very long interview I did for the film, The Minds of Men, which is now, I don't know, 1.5 million people have looked at this film, and I'm featured. They described me as a star at one point of this film, but I'm actually a featured commentator mostly in the final segments, parts 3 and 4. And it's about mind control. It's about government efforts to support mind control and philanthropic organizations contributing to mind control. This is all documented, and there's nothing in here that is, weird or out there or speculative or conspiracy thinking. I mean, this is really powerful, powerful stuff. One of the things I wanted to talk about briefly today and to focus, your attention on drugs. I know I don't always focus as much on the medications as some of the folks might like, and maybe some other people think I focus on it too much. Because I have two lives here. One is, the person who stands up, the conscience of psychiatry. There it is, the conscience of psychiatry. But the other life is wanting to help people live better, to stand up for themselves. I want to leave you with one important thought, and we've got a few calls now lining up, and that is that the simplest thing to understand about psychiatric drugs is that they're neurotoxins. And if you go to my website and go to my blogs, you will find a wonderful blog, The Psychiatric Drugs and Neurotoxins. That is, they're poisonous to the brain. And so if you think you're getting a good effect, it means that either the mild euphoria, which is almost never long-lasting, you don't want it to be because that's a serious harm, either the euphoria or the blunting, the kind of just flattening your emotions, feels like a relief to you. And I certainly understand that, but it's not good for you in the long run. But the only way a psychiatric drug can work is by poisoning, that is disrupting, causing perturbation in your infinitely marvelous, wonderful brain. As I've often said, more complex than anything else in the universe. What you have on your shoulders, in your head, more complex, really, probably, than the entire universe. That's how complicated all these, you know, millions and hundreds of millions of neurotransmitters and their hundreds of millions of their connections. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. And there's no way at this point to begin to disentangle how they all work, how they function to be us or communicate us or house us, however you want to metaphorically look at it. So neurotoxins are poisons, and you can't rush off of them because your brain changes to fight the neurotoxin. It doesn't try to get along with so much as it fights the neurotoxin and creates bad imbalances in your brain. You don't have any imbalances unless you have a brain disease, which almost no one who goes to a psychiatrist has. I mean, you don't have anything wrong in your brain. It's your emotions, your feelings, your thinking. It's part of your life, how you were brought up, how you were nurtured or not, how you were educated or not, whether you've had love or not. I mean, all that goes into how you feel as a human being, whether you develop good ideas on your own or bad ideas. It all goes into who you are. It's very complex. And we only get a hint about ourselves and who we are in this life that we're trying to live here. And you just can't put anything into that brain that is going to do anything, if it affects the brain, except upset it. So, but since the brain's fighting back, you also can't just stop taking the drugs right away. You have to go slow. You have to be careful. And you know, I've written a book, Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal, that deals with what's the matter with the drugs. That's the first half. And what do each of them do that's harmful? And survey, and then some, and the basic principles of coming off drugs. And you can also get a lot out of medication madness, which is, you know, about the harm from the drugs. But it also has a section at the end on psychiatric drug withdrawal. So, you know, my blog that I think is one of the most important ones, What is a Neurotoxin? I mean, actually, the blog is What Should We Really Call Psychiatric Drugs? So look for What Should We Really Call Psychiatric Drugs? And just go to blogs on my website, and you'll find this on Mad in America, the wonderful website, Mad in America, with Bob Whitaker. So I'm going to rest my voice now, and you can see my voice is just a little stressed. I think it's a spring allergy. And let's connect to phone call one. Eve in Utah, helping a schizophrenic friend is what this subject is. Are you there, Eve?
I am here.
Good. How are you doing today?
Most excellent. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I've had this virus. I brought it back from Denmark, and I'm just getting over it day by day, and I think my voice is still maybe showing it, but I'm doing really good. I'm really excited about my life and new things I'm writing and stuff like that. Working on getting my video, still working on getting my video studio in the corner of my big home office set up, stuff like that. So, Eve, tell me about your situation. Without giving away personal information about your friend, do they know you're asking about them?
His mother knows.
Okay. And yeah. He's not enough well to take care of himself to be able to say?
He lives in a controlled environment with other so-called mentally ill people, and he's on a cocktail of medications that keep him under control.
Do you think they actually keep him under control? I mean, because it's possible that a lot of his out of control has come from the years on the drugs. Never forget that. And then you take the poor soul off without doing it properly, slowly, with supervision, with help, full understanding and caring. And if you don't do that gradually with the drugs, the brain is just going to go wild as it is deprived of the neurotoxins it's been fighting. And you sort of unleash the monster brain that's been fighting the monster drugs. And so a lot of time when people say a drug is keeping somebody under control, it's the withdrawal where the person gets out of control. It makes them think that. But that's like saying alcohol is keeping the alcoholic under control, because when they go into DTs, they're really wild. Does that make sense to you, Eve, as an analogy?
I totally understand. I also understand that, but anyway, the issue for me is I love this kid, and I'd like to be able to help him somehow. And I'm wondering if you have any suggestions.
Well, are you on good terms with this family? I mean, what's your relationship?
Relationship with him is that I'm friends with his mother, and I've been friends with him since he was a child. He's 24 years old now. I'm 68. But he and I had a very special and deep connection, probably deeper than I had with his mother. And when he was 17, he became so-called schizophrenic, went round the bend. And it's made me very sad for a long time, and I'd like to be able to help him.
Are you able to go into this facility or home anytime you wish to visit him?
Yes, I do live 750 miles away at this point, but I go to where he is fairly frequently, like maybe 3 or 4 times a year, because it's where I used to live. Yes, and I can. It's not like a lockdown facility. It's more of like a big house with a bunch of people in it. A little more complex than that, but kind of like that.
Okay.
And I can visit him on his birthday. I went out to lunch with him, you know. And when he comes over to the house, I interact with him if I'm there. And it's really, I really, when he relates to me, his mother tells me that he kind of like comes out of it when he relates to me. He changes when he relates to me.
Well, that's wonderful. And that happens with people who are labeled schizophrenic or deeply disturbed. I mean, when they get a glimmer of relationship, like anybody else, they can brighten up, and it can be a fairly dramatic change. It may not last, but you certainly can do that with helping people. And does his mother live nearby him, or is she also pretty far away?
Yeah. No, she lives in the same town.
Okay.
And she visits him, but I think that she's more or less given up trying to help him.
Mm-hmm. So he's on a bunch of drugs. I don't need to know the particular drugs, but he's getting the usual poly drug therapy, several kinds of drugs at once.
Yes, and I don't really know what they are.
Yeah. Does your friend, his mother, have any access to the treating physician, the person who's giving
probably
the meds, prescribing the meds?
Yeah, probably, yes.
Well, I mean, you could, working with his mom especially, perhaps try to talk to the doctor, maybe share one of my books with him, Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal, and talk to him about the possibility of slowly and carefully removing him from some of his meds. And then the most important principle is as you're reducing somebody's meds, is if they start to feel bad or upset, you go back to the previous dose. But you got to figure out which to start with and stuff like that. Maybe you could build a relationship there. Maybe mom would get interested in him again and feel more hope, not interest. I'm sure she's interested. Feel more hope and start some sort of new hope for him in terms working with him. And he's only 24 years old, but he's probably been on drugs for 7 years since his break was 17.
Yeah, well, it was hard. Like, yes, he was, like, I've spoken to her, to his mother about, you know, weaning him off the drugs. And she says that when he goes off the drugs, he ends up homeless and, you know, goes around the bend.
Well, that's possible. It happens. Sometimes it may not even be due to the drugs. Maybe it might be due to something that's going on independent of that, his own spiritual state, his psychological state. But I certainly think that if you go very slowly, that's not going to happen. You may not get him off all his drugs. Because you probably won't have somebody working very closely with him, which I think would be necessary for that. Is there a way to get a therapist involved in his life? He probably doesn't have one now, does he?
I don't know. I mean, I just kind of assume that there's therapists at the facility where he is.
Well, it may not be. It's another, you could try to see, you know, an outsider's interest can either upset people at a facility or make them happy if they're really interested in the identified patient's condition. You might just try thinking about, well, let's learn about what he's getting. Who are the people who are helping him? Could we think about coming off medications very slowly so nobody would be scared? And take your time between, you know, the doctor should take his time between removing the meds. I mean, even if it took a year. I mean, to slowly pull him off, it is possible that he might recover a lot since he's still only 24 years old. Think about whether there are pets there. Find out if there's some sort of volunteer group in the community that might be interested. I mean, it's all about getting people interested in him and getting him interested in people in some way again and building some more confidence and trust with people and just see what you can do. We could talk for quite at length, but I'm gonna go on and take some other callers now. But it would be nice to hear from you again. Eve, call in and say, I'm calling back, and this is what we found out, and this is how we're doing. But let me give you another minute and see what else you have on your mind.
There is one thing I wanted to mention, and the thing that concerns me is that he doesn't really have the right kind of support and for coming off the drugs, it seems to me. And that's what, you know, that's what I can't seem to muster because I'm so far away.
That's actually kind of what I'm talking about. You need to be talking more with his mother. You need to find out if there's a therapist. Let the therapist know there are people who care about him, a counselor. Talk to the doctor. Get him more interested in doing something other than just letting him stay on the medicine. So if that's what you want to do, I mean, if you want to help him yourself as the agent of help, that would be my suggestion. Not easy. It's a big task. I'm not saying you're responsible to do, you have that responsibility, but that would be the approach. Okay, let me go on to Monica in Indiana, my wife's home state, my mother-in-law's home state, who has a mental illness question. Monica?
Yes, hello.
Hi.
Hi, I have a question. Like about people that are diagnosed with a mental illness, like bipolar. I actually was diagnosed as bipolar, I think, like in the year 2001, maybe. And I went through all kinds of trouble and was like just put on a bunch of pills and all these things. And it was like, I just knew that there really wasn't anything wrong with me. And like 2012, I was taken off of all of my medication. I ended up switching doctors, and I was going through a bunch of legal stuff back then. And I haven't been on any medication anymore, lost a bunch of weight, and I'm back to myself, and I can even talk now. But, like, with everything I was going through, which one was a divorce, like, all of my assets, all of my money, even my spousal support got set up in an irrevocable trust. Like, I had a guardianship and all these things. Like, I didn't sign up for any of that, which, yeah, I was incapacitated at the time because I was all drugged up at the time. And then, like, my banks changed and, like, all these things. And I was like, well, I'm not mentally ill or anything like that. But it's like after all the damage was done, which took the court system a little under a year to decide, it's like all these years have went by. And it's like, is there a resource for somebody like me or, like, a form? Like, I heard of a voidable contract, which would wipe that out so I can go about my life. And, like, if there's anything out there for someone like me.
Well, I think you're asking right now, at this moment, an entirely legal question. The only psychiatric or psychological part of it would be whether you are insufficient control of your life, that you'll be able to convince people of that. And that's a separate question. But you would need a lawyer for this. There are legal aid things available. I don't know what there is in Indiana, but perhaps you could Google legal aid in Indiana. Some law schools have clinics where help is given to people who can't afford it. But you would need legal help for all the questions you were just asking me. How is your life going outside of that issue of regaining control over your finances and so on?
Oh, besides that, yeah, that's just paper anyways. I don't really dwell on that. But
do you get it? Let me ask, do you get a steady income from it?
No, I don't. I was, like, put on SSI because I was, you know, housewife and raising kids and stuff like that, so I don't have that steady, like, you know, the professional life. I went back to school.
I'm so sorry. Maybe I misunderstood. I thought some of your money was still in trust.
Excuse me?
I thought your money was still in trust and you wanted to try to break that.
Yes. All of my money is still in a trust.
But you don't get an income from
it? It's not actually my money. So, like, I have a trustee. Like, I have to go. Like, if I want anything, I have to ask somebody and they have to decide if I can have it. And I've asked, like, for money for a lawyer. And, well, of course they're not going to give me a lawyer because they want to keep it.
Yes.
And
well, I would try to get some local legal help.
like, oh, my gosh.
And maybe start out by calling the nearest law school. You're near a big city, call the nearest law school and ask them. But also Google it.
Yeah.
So tell me, how are you doing now? You started to tell me what was happening now.
Yeah.
You live by yourself?
Well, actually, that happened in Michigan, and I just sort of, like, I moved to Indiana, and I, you know, was divorced. Like, I left there at the end of 2009, and then like about a year ago I moved. But yeah, life's great now.
Monica, it sounds to me like mainly what you're interested in calling me is sort of getting disentangled, and I think from things that happened in the past, I think you need to go ahead and take the initiative to get a lawyer. And I wish you the best, Monica. I hope that you can feel that you'll get more control over your life. Let's go to Dean.
I hope so.
Monica, I'm going to say goodbye now. Bye-bye. And let me go to Dean, and who has a question.
Hello.
Hi, Dean.
Hi, how's it going?
It's going pretty good here.
All right. I hope you don't mind. I'm driving. I have my hands free.
Well, I would, for your safety, much be fair if you'd pull over. Is that possible? We can wait a second or two or whatever. Can you pull over?
Well, I can't, but there's frequent stoplights.
I'm not real comfortable, Dean, with that.
You know what? I will pull over right now because I am just at an exit, so I will pull over right now.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Actually,
I mean, folks, do you imagine we're talking to Dean on the phone and we hear a crash and that's the last of it? I don't even know where he is.
No. I'm in Yonkers, New York. I will pull right over. There's a light coming up here. I can see it. So I will go ahead and turn. I'll make a right turn and I will stop the car.
Okay. Go ahead and do that, Dean.
Thank you for your patience and concern and everything.
All right. Well, listen, folks, we have a good number of callers now. I think the most recent caller from Ohio might be the last caller I'll be able to take. I'm not certain. We'll see how the calls go. But I'm definitely going to try to get to the caller in Ohio before we finish. So, Dean, are you safe?
Okay. I am safe. I am stopped on a side road.
Okay.
I'm stopped on a side road. Park, emergency brake up. We're ready to go.
I didn't hear that. It sounds like you're making a joke, but I didn't hear it.
Oh, I know. I said I am parked and my emergency brake is up.
Okay, good.
We're here. So now, a second question came up, but I'll stick with the question that I told the call screener. Basically, I have a new psychiatrist. She's into the idea. She said she likes the idea of minimal medication. I saw her once. I am on three psychiatric medications. I've been for years, eight years by now. Life has just been circular in a circle, but that's another story. It's just the point is, I'm taking a high-quality fish oil and vitamin D and folic acid. But the fish oil, I feel like since I started it 3-4 years ago maybe, I noticed that I could compose my thoughts better and interact with people, but there's still that underlying feeling of kind of like I think what you described on YouTube as being kind of apathy, and I wonder if how to approach it with my new psychiatrist, because I get the feeling that the fish oil kind of masks what the psychiatric medication is actually doing to me. I sleep 12 hours a night a lot, and
what are your psychiatric meds?
Lithium. I take 900 at night and 600 in the morning during day, and the other ones are clozapine. I take 100 milligrams at night, and then Lamictal. I take 200 milligrams at night.
Dean, you're on a load of medication there. I mean, any of those drugs could make you feel logy, listless, apathetic. And you've been on them for how many years, did you say?
8 years.
8 years. They all have a wide range of serious adverse effects. You might want to get a hold of my book, Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal. Get your library to get it for you, or get yourself a copy. You can do it through my website. You can do it probably even more easily through Amazon.
I think it's in the library.
But I think it would help you to read through what those... It'll tell you what all those drugs are doing. And I think that the fish oil is probably the least of your problems, although high doses of fish oil are probably not at all what they're cracked up to be. They're not some marvelous nutrient for your brain. And you might Google the doses of fish oil that you're using, which wouldn't mean much to me, and see what kind of adverse effects are reported with them. It's not harmless in high doses. But you're on a lot of drugs. Were you hospitalized? By the way, if you don't want to talk about something, you tell me. But
no,
I mean, were you hospitalized at one point that you ended up on so much medication?
September 12th, 2001 was my first hospitalization. I know that's an auspicious date.
Yeah.
Right before, September 11th, I know people who have, they had some sort of a vision or a dream or something like that with the before September 11th occurred. And I doubt myself sometimes, but I remember being one of those people, and I remember freaking out the next day. But over the time, I've had 12 hospitalizations total. And my last one was in 2010. And I remember since then, I said, all right, you know what? I'm just going to sit back. I'm going to take the medication that they give me. I'm just going to, kind of lay down and take it all. And since then, I've just kind of gave up the fight, and I've never had a hospitalization after that. And I don't think I'll have one ever again.
Well, how are you doing in terms of your life itself? Do you have a full life? Do you have activities and things that bring you joy, satisfaction?
Not so much. I mean, I play the guitar, but I haven't written any music in about 10 years. It's complex. I don't know how far you want me to get into this, but I'll tell you all we want to know. It's totally fine by me.
Well, I want to encourage you to be thinking about having a life. You're surviving now. And survival will get harder and harder over the years on large doses of any psychoactive substance.
Right.
So I think it would be really great if your psychiatrist is up to you're coming off meds very gradually. I do think you're the one of the people I wrote psychiatric drug withdrawal for, and you could communicate with your psychiatrist about it and try to figure out what drugs would help you. You want to come off first. It might be the lithium, but it's got to be slow. And also think about diet. Think about improving your health in general with diet and exercise. You could listen to Pam Popper. Go to Bregan.com and get the link for the radio shows, and you can actually search Pam Popper on the radio page and look at our discussions about diet and get her book Food Over Food Is Medicine. A whole food vegetable. The basic plant-based diet can help with anything you want to improve in your life. Just about anything gets better if we eat right and get mild exercise. But you should become more of a student now, perhaps, of the drugs and of withdrawal.
Okay.
But also building a life. Have you ever had a decent therapist?
Yeah. The therapist I have now, I've been with him for 3 years, and I like him a lot. He's really helpful with me. He understands me, I think, and to be quite honest, I truthfully don't feel like I have a lot of family support as far as getting off drugs is concerned.
No, the families get scared, and you would have to reassure your family that you're going about it very sensibly and show them a book about it and explain to them what your goals are and that you're going to take months and months and months to do this and that you want their support in helping you. And if you see your family regularly?
Oh, I live with my mother. And
all right, well, you got to enlist your mother into this whole process. Yeah. Maybe bring her to the therapist and talk together.
It's kind of tough. Like, I don't want to get say too much in the air, but, I mean, it was kind of tough because she basically, my dad was diagnosed bipolar and he had a psychotic break in 1975. Everything, keep it short for the radio.
You're doing fine. Bipolar, there's no evidence it's genetic, by the way. I mean, okay. there's no evidence that there's a genetic combination that makes people bipolar. There were claims like that, but all that's fallen apart. So right. keep that in mind, that your life is in your own hands ultimately, Dean.
And that's what I felt like, and I felt like for such a long time that my life isn't in my own hands, and now I'm,
yeah.
I've been on Social Security disability for the past 8-10 years or whatever, and I feel like there's such a disincentive to be able to do, you know, to move forward and work, so I feel kind of trapped there too.
Well, you got to find your own sense of responsibility for yourself, your own hope, your own belief
yeah.
that you want to be guiding your own life. And I don't
yeah.
think there's anything that you should do on an emergency or abrupt basis. You're living with your mom. You got a therapist. You got a psychiatrist who is sounds like she's told you at least that she'd like to help you withdraw. Educate yourself.
Yeah.
My website. Also, Mad in America's got a great website.
I watched you on YouTube for like 4 hours. So.
Okay.
I watched you on YouTube for like four hours so far.
Okay. Well, you know, you have good resources there. And you can even take one of my courses we've got some new consumer level ones that aren't all that expensive. You can find my courses again on the website. You know, start to think about what kind of life can I build? What do I need?
Yeah.
Do you have any belief in God, Dean?
Absolutely. I grew up Jewish but converted to Christianity when I was 20-something, 23.
Well, I'm Jewish, but, and I'm very much influenced by Christianity, and I deeply believe in love. And try to use church as another place to meet young people.
There's a church that I partner with. I'll say, well, you know, I'm even scared to tell you on the air because, like, what if my mom's listening, which she's not, you know?
Okay.
You know,
my message for you is, you know, start deciding to gradually take charge of your life. You're living with your mother. You need to reassure her. You might ask her, Mom, what do you need from me to feel more encouraged? And I'm sure she would like you to take better care of yourself or get out of the house more or do things or take some classes. Talk to your mom. Enlist your mom. As long as you're in a dependent relationship with her, you really need to do to get her on your side. But you also
That's
need to
help
change
her.
And grow. You need to decide.
Yeah,
I'm going to do that.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough for my mom. Like she's the one point. Is, you know, like I once time she asked me about my religion, and I told her, and she got really, really, really mad at me for it.
Sure.
Really, you know, the spiritual stuff. I don't really talk to her about that stuff. You know, I know people who I you know. But anyway, like.
Well, I'm not suggesting you deepen the intimacy with your mom. I'm glad you brought that up. I'm suggesting that you just. Try to figure out how to behave, as long as it's reasonable, so that your mom will feel somewhat more secure about you and not actively interfere with something like you're coming off medication. And mainly, make up your own mind. You've got two resources, three. You've got therapist, you've got psychiatrist, you've got the church. You've got that.
Yeah.
So, you know, start building a life. That's what I'm hearing, that you've been trying to survive, and the medications over the years will wear you down, but you also can't come off them quickly, or you'll be in serious trouble, more serious than you're in now. So build a life for yourself.
Yeah, a doctor once took me off of clozapine like way too soon, and it was a really bad idea.
It's a bad idea, definitely.
Yeah.
Okay, Dean,
anyway,
thank you for calling.
Like
feel free to call back again and let us know that you're making some progress with figuring out how to build a life for yourself. Okay, let's go to Todd in Maryland, overprescribed benzodiazepines. Hi, Todd.
How are you? Hi, doctor. How are you?
Getting a little hoarse. Maybe I'm talking too much. Why don't you try doing some talking, Todd?
Yeah, I get hoarse after I talk to you, unfortunately.
Well, no, I didn't hear that. I'm having a little trouble hearing some of my folks today. Maybe it's the waning virus. But say again what you just did.
I said, yeah, I tend to get hoarse after talking myself. It's been a long, okay. long year, very stress-filled. Mother passed away from cancer back in June. But getting to the point of benzodiazepines, and your last caller had mentioned he was on clonazepam, and that was one of the things that my doctor prescribed me after being on Xanax for way too long, in my opinion, with no black box warning from the doctor, after I did my own research, and basically becoming dependent to Xanax, clonazepam, and now I'm in a tapering stage through my own research of Dr. Heather Ashton, if you've ever heard of her.
No, of course, yes. I cite her in a lot of my books. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of really the only resources I've found dealing with benzodiazepines once I realized what was going on.
I've got a lot on that in my psychiatric drug withdrawal book. I have a lot about coming off benzos, but go ahead.
I started tapering back in October, and I completely got off Xanax. That was fairly easy, believe it or not, from what I've read. I'm also on several benzo forums. It's okay to mention one on your show. You know, it's been very resourceful, because I had no idea the epidemic that benzodiazepines was. In my
right.
opinion, I would compare it to opioid dependency and addiction, and the withdrawals are just horrendous. They've ruined my life for the past year. I ended up losing my job because I was just walking around like a zombie. And prior to that, I was diagnosed with a digestive disorder, which put me on the medication for my anxiety, because I was basically in fear of even driving to work or leaving work to drive to a job without wondering where the next bathroom was. That's, you know, how bad my digestive issues was, which have since been corrected. But I think the long-term effect of having to go to the bathroom every day multiple times and needing to be close to the bathroom mentally took its toll on me, to reach out to a doctor and get me prescribed on Xanax originally. And then when that stopped having an effect on me, put me on clonazepam. And then I was interdosing between the two. And he was just filling it willy-nilly, like candy, never even going in to see him or giving me, like, oh, you've been on this way too long. You know, it took me to do my own research on benzodiazepines to find out that they're really, you know, not supposed to be prescribed any longer than 4 weeks. And I had been on it for close to a year and had built up a dependency to it. And then all of a sudden started experiencing all these strange withdrawal side effects, dependent phobias. Ended up losing my job, which added more to the stress, which kept me taking the pills. And here I am, like, stuck in a rabbit hole, even though I'm tapering. It's like the middle of the day. I'm talking to a doctor on the telephone, and because there's not a whole lot of resources out there, even locally, through psychiatrists, physicians, and therapists in my area. And I'm in a pretty deep, not deep, but large metropolitan area between Baltimore and D.C., and I've been to a couple therapists. I've been to a psychiatrist.
Yeah. So, Todd, where are you now in terms of your life, and how can I be helpful to you?
I guess going back to it seems like this Dr. Heather Ashton is the only one who's done really in-depth research of getting off of benzodiazepines and the damage they do to your GABA receptors and your CNS. And I'm in the throes of all of it.
Todd, I'm a little puzzled, because actually I've written in a lot of detail about this. So I would hope that you would, you know, see if you could get psychiatric drug withdrawal at your library or get yourself a copy, because you're complaining a lot about the lack of anybody ever writing about it. And I've written a lot about it. So it might be useful for you to get a look at that. That might help you a lot.
Well, yeah, again, you know, once I've stumbled upon what was going on with me, and doing
well,
my
where are
research.
You now in your withdrawal? What are you taking right now, Todd?
Well, according to the Ashton manual, I slowly tapered off the clonazepam. to Valium, and I take 10 milligrams in the a.m. and the afternoons are the worst because now I'm completely off clonazepam, where I was in my early parts, or not early, but a couple months into my tapering, off the clonazepam to strictly Valium, which is what I'm on now. And now, basically, the Valium has nothing near the side effect of relieving my anxiety and my stress. It's almost like, you know.
Yeah, do you have a therapist as well?
Yes, I did, and a psychiatrist who put me on Seroquel because I had insomnia.
Are you on Seroquel now?
Yes.
All right. Well, look into all that. Read about this.
Oh, I have. Doctor,
Seroquel itself has a lot of problems. So just keep all that in mind and educate yourself a little bit beyond Heather Ashton. Her work is great, but it's primarily just focused on benzos. You need to learn about Seroquel and keep educating yourself. But it sounds like you're moving in the right direction, Todd.
Well, I thought I was, but it seems like I've just hit a wall, and I just...
Well, how many milligrams of Valium are you on?
My tabs are 10. I usually take either a 0.5 milligram or a 10 in the morning, depending on how I feel after I wake up. But usually by the afternoon, I'm just stressed out because, it ended up...
But Todd, this is a bit complicated for me to respond to. You've got a lot of help there.
Well, I really got no... I've lost family support. I don't have friends that know what I'm going through. I've developed...
Did you hear me talking with the last caller about building some relationships with the community, with other people, taking more charge of his life? Sounds like that would be an important direction for you to go in, Todd. I've only got a few minutes left. I'm going to go to Trenet in Ohio, and we've got a few minutes left to chat. Are you there?
Hello?
Hello? Who is this? Hello. I'm Peter Bregan. Who are you?
Thank you, Dr. Bregan. My name is Trine, and I want to thank you for taking my call.
Okay, hi.
Hi. I'll be as brief as I can. I'm in a situation where, as guardian of the person for my adult daughter, who's been in the mental health system now for about 20-some years almost, we've reached an impasse. She's just been taken back there today from the county jail, and they called me and asked for my permission to administer medication, which they have to ask me since I'm the guardian, and I took a stand and I refused because my daughter's been complaining about her heart bothering her, and there's a history of heart conditions on her dad's side. So for that situation there, I did refuse, and now they're pretty upset with me. They say that I always stand in the way of treatment, but it's just because I know that if she is not getting better with their constant regimen of antipsychotics, and she's actually losing the ability to function, but she still has the will to live and the will to have a life and the desire to have a life and to work. And I've reached out to the Ohio Disability Rights to try to get someone there to understand that it's wrong to make someone keep taking something that is going to kill their heart in the interest of mental illness. But I feel like I'm standing all alone, and it's really hard when somebody goes on disability and SSI to get that support from, the medical community to help you to work around it. It's like a juggernaut. They won't budge. It's like they have her where they want her, and they're determined to do what they're going to do. And then they always blame her and say, well, she didn't take her medication. That's why her treatment failed.
Yeah, wow. And she's been on treatment for 20 years now. Was she off meds when she was landed in jail?
She might have been kind of taking some of them in a haphazard matter, but I kind of sat down and really documented what I've seen with my daughter over the years, and it really does seem like she has, multiple personalities that kind of come into conflict and always sabotage whatever she means to do. I apologize for that. That things sabotage what she means to do, and there's several different personalities that always step up, and it doesn't seem like the drugs have any effect on those whatsoever. She can be fully medicated, and, you know, she will do something bizarre. And then later on, you know, she's like, well, why did I do that? I shouldn't have done it. So I keep telling them their drugs don't work, and it's deeper, and she needs psychotherapy, I think. But they won't even look at things like CBD that might help her and not harm her. They have a one-size-fits-all approach. Take these drugs, and they're giving her just about every one of them in the list, and she's not getting better.
Oh, my gosh. It's, you know, you're talking about such a difficult situation. And how did she land in jail? Is that okay to tell us?
Oh, I'm happy to share that. It was foster family that had told her she was welcome to come back and visit at any time. Now, in reality, these people didn't know her. But at one point in her teenage life, she was in foster care when we had had a traumatic incident in our family where one of her younger siblings died of SIDS. And the family got broken up by CPS. They came in, they were on a witch hunt, and they broke everything up and moved everyone out, and they made her go back and stay with her dad, whom I divorced, and things didn't go well then, and she ended up in the foster care. So at one point in her life, she was in foster care.
What a nightmare for you to go through. God, what a nightmare.
Well, yeah, and that's what I think maybe has triggered this whole thing, but they keep trying to treat it with these drugs. And
right.
I know her behavior is bizarre.
I agree with you, Trine, that she's not going to get better on the drugs. That isn't going to be she's going to get better with some sort of support system. Where does she live?
Well, she lives with me when she can live with me, but she can be very difficult to live with because of the things that come in and sabotage her best intentions. It can go well for a few days, you know, and then it'll start to go downhill, and you'll see like these other personalities kind of come in, and, you know, it's a non-smoking house. She's okay with that the first few days. Then you see that subtle change, and you see that cigarette light up, you know, so.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I wish I had other people here to help me at this last few minutes of the show, because it's like there's so much going on with you and her. One of the things that could make a big change in your lives, if she would agree, would be to find a therapist to work with the two of you. You're probably the most important person in her life. Does that make sense, that you're the most important person?
Yes. And I'm there for her. I'm not going to back out of this. I'm there for her too, Dr. Bragan. I'm not going to back out of this.
Okay. Well, you know, if you could find maybe a clinical social worker, a counselor, a marriage and family counselor, not that, you know, it's not for the marriage, obviously, it's for the family part, who would work with the two of you on improving your relationship. Because if you could, you're a good person, you're obviously responsible to her, you're working with her, you want to help her. The biggest change that could be made is that, for example, if she came home to live with you, the two of you were talking with somebody else about the rules of living there. Or the two of you could talk about what you needed from each other in order for her to live there. So that anything you could do to help you and your daughter live together peacefully, that would be the goal. To live together with respect is the first, and then more love later. But to live respectfully and peacefully together, that would change her life if that could be managed. And she would have to really retake responsibility for herself to the best of her ability. And maybe if you could find somebody who would work with the two of you that way, that's what I would do in my practice if somebody was here in town and, you know, family here. That's what I would help them do.
Okay,
hey,
we'll
thank
take
you,
that.
Trine,
we'll run
for
with
calling.
It.
All right, see if you have any luck with that. Bye-bye now. Thank you so much. Thank you, my wonderful audience, for listening. It's amazing to be on the air and trying to help with such difficult situations. I hope it's useful to you to listen in and get some ideas from me about how to handle tough situations. And email me. Let me know how it's going out there. Let me know what you're thinking about it. And give me an email to call, okay? And that's BreganLive@Hotmail.com. BreganLive@Hotmail.com. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.